Hi everybody. So my name is Luis Miguel de Santiago. I am a PhD student in Dr. David Stille's lab at Texas A&M University. And this morning I will be presenting capture-based genotyping by sequencing, a first look. So let's go ahead and get started. So the rapid growth and improvement in sequencing technologies within the past decade has revolutionized crop genotyping. Some of these technologies include whole genome shotgun sequencing, next generation sequencing, as well as reduced representation sequencing. Now, whole genome shotgun sequencing is a little bit older, but the computational means by which assembly occurs has greatly improved within the past 10 years, which is why I have it up here. Next generation sequencing, that includes PacBio, Illumina, IonTorrent, et cetera, and reduced representation sequencing. Now, this type is a little bit different because in this case, we're only sequencing a specific region of a genome or a subset. Now, this is great if you want to circumvent issues that are associated with complex genomes. For example, whole genome shotgun sequencing and next generation sequencing, those are great if you have a simple genome to sequence. In this case, hirsutum, you know, cotton, not exactly a simple genome. It's an allotetraploid, paleodiploid, has multiple repetitive elements. It's not the easiest genome sequence so far. So once you have your genome sequence, the next step is typically to identify markers and to use these markers to identify or track loci or genes of interest. Some of the markers include simple sequence repeats, also known as microsatellites or single tandem repeats, restriction fragment length polymorphisms, and single nucleotide polymorphisms, otherwise known as SNPs. So in this presentation, I'm going to be talking about capture-based genotyping, which is a subset of reduced representation sequencing, and I'm going to be focusing on SNPs specifically. So identifying SNPs, and in this case, true high-quality SNPs, is very important because once you identify the SNPs, you can then use them for the following analysis. You can conduct genome-wide association analysis to identify important agronomic traits, such as the following. You can use them for linkage mapping, which has utility in genome mapping and genome assembly validation, amongst other things, as well as a quantitative trait loci mapping. A colleague of mine presenting afterwards is actually going to do his presentation on this, so I won't go into detail about it, and marker-assisted selection. So marker-assisted selection is very important for a lot of breeders. You can use it for validation of lines and selection quality control. So this is the approach outline for this presentation. I'm going to be talking about capture-based genotyping by sequencing in order to identify SNPs, and I'm also going to include a depth of coverage analysis in order to validate a copy number variance experiment that I'll also be talking about later on in the presentation. So it's split into two data sets, the presentation. The first one is a very simple, very straightforward assessment of SNP mining in 27 cotton cultivars. I'm basically going to ask how many quality SNPs can we find, and more specifically, how many true high-quality SNPs can we find. It's going to be just one slide, very quick. The second set of data that I'm going to talk about, done through the same methods, the same approach, is going to be a little bit different. In this case, it's going to be an experimental application. I'm going to ask, do the mined SNPs accurately represent the cotton lines by applying the SNPs to a copy number variance analysis? And in this case, what I mean by copy number variance, I mean that we're just going to look at how many chromosomes are actually in within these lines. All right, so this is the approach. So in conjunction and in collaboration with Rabogenomics, which is a company based in Florida, we designed 80,000 probes with 120 base pair breadth of coverage. So 80,000 probes times 120 base pairs, that gives us 9.6 megabase sequence target. So that's going to be our horizontal coverage. Now, keep in mind that this is pretty small. And our target depth of coverage is 60x. This is going to be our vertical sequencing coverage. We're going for a 60x representation in order to try to have a robust analysis for our copy number variance analysis. So one of the things going forward that I want everybody to keep in mind is that we're only sequencing 9.6 megabases of the genome. That's really small compared to the entire genome of hirsutum, specifically TM1, which is a little over 2.some gigabases. So it's pretty small. This is just the approach for the bioinformatic pipeline. So the sequencing reads were analyzed for quality control using PastQC. They were aligned to a 9.6 megabase backend reference. This is a TM1 reference, hirsutum, containing known SNPs. This was created by Dr. Amanda Holskamp back in 2015. The reads were aligned using CLC Genomics Workbench. And the aligned reads were processed and the variants were called using the SAMTools utility suite. And all of this was done using an in-house protocol that's been published by Amanda. and the resources used were provided by the A&M's TIGS facility. So for the quality control, the reads refer the process using a set of Perl scripts that are published by Dr. Ashrafi from North Carolina State University. The identified SNPs were filtered for excessive read depth and aberrant heterozygosity, and later on I'll explain why heterozygosity is a good filtering criteria. And then the SNPs were aligned to the Gossypium hirsutum 81 genome that's found on CottonGen. Now this alignment was specifically done just for the copy number variance analysis, not so much for the assessment of the cultivars. Okay, so these are the results. This is the first data set. It's just one slide. So these are 27 homozygous inbred lines. What I want to point out is up here. So the horizontal line is the cultivar lines. The x-axis is the number of markers. As we can see here on the legend, we have the nucleotide bases. But I want to point out that a majority of these lines have evenly distributed nucleotides, which is what we want to see. Now, the green represents heterozygosity. These are inbred lines, so we should not see heterozygosity. So down here in the summary statistics, out of the 333,000 SNPs that we found, only 3% were heterozygous, which is pretty good. Now, the heterozygosity can be attributed to either contamination, but the people that I spoke to said that these lines are not contaminated, so it's more than likely just bad calls, which is expected when you have so many hundreds of thousands of SNPs, you're going to have some noise, so that's pretty expected. 3% noise is not bad. We had a lot of missing calls, 344,000, so that's pretty much half of the data set. And one of the reasons why we had so many missing calls is because we had very poor depth of coverage, as you can see down here in the bottom, so it's pretty difficult to see. But the lines that exhibited the least calls, line 8, 19, and 27, also had the least depth of coverage, 3.16, 2.9, 2.7, etc. So we wanted 60x, we hit around 10x depth of coverage, so we pretty much missed our mark, but you know what they say, no plan survives first contact with the enemy, so it's bound to happen. Okay, so this is the second data set, same format. So in this case, we're looking at some hypoaneuploid lines and some radiation hybrids. On the left side, we have the controls, TM1, Barbadense, and F1 of those two parents, and on the right, we have our experimental lines. We have two isogenic lines, hirsutum 11 and hirsutum 21. So these are hypoaneuploid for chromosome 11, hypoaneuploid for chromosome 21. That means that they're missing those respective pairs from hirsutum. We have an F1 intraspecific cross, a hirsutum and Barbadense, hypoaneuploid for 11, hypoaneuploid for 17, and then we have some F1s radiation hybrids, which I'll talk about later on in the presentation. And similarly, we see the equal distribution of nucleotides, and then we see heterozygosity where expected. These are F1s, so we expect heterozygosity because they're interspecific crosses. And these are the respective depth of coverage. Averages at around 7. So this is the same data set, but now we're looking at it in terms of where the alleles came from. So if it's red, it means it came from TM1. If it's blue, it means it came from Barbadense. If it's green, it means it's heterozygous. So our isogenic homozygous lines are all red, which is what you expect. And then our F1s are green, which is what we're expecting. And this at the bottom is our normalized depth of coverage. So I normalized the experimental lines to the control set for the copy number variance analysis. So this is the G hirsutum hypoaneuploid for chromosome 11. This is an isogenic homozygous line that's missing a pair in chromosome 11. This is the normalized depth of coverage. So what we were thinking is that if we have a line that's missing a chromosome, we should see half of the depth of coverage at that specific chromosome. That is exactly what we see here. So on the x-axis, we have the chromosome, 1 through 26. And on the y-axis, we have the normalized depth of coverage. And in chromosome 11, we see about half of the read depth as compared to the rest of the genome. So this is the exact same data, but now we're looking at the allele based on parent. Now it's all red because it all came from parent 1, which is TM1. That's what we expect. It's isogenic, homozygous. Same format, except we're looking at a hypoaneuploid for chromosome 21. Here's chromosome 21. Now, in this case, what I failed to mention earlier is that we're looking at 26,000 SNPs along the genome. Each chromosome averages out to 1,000 SNPs, which is a happy coincidence. That's 26,000 and 26 chromosomes. And as you can see here, chromosome 21 has about half of the depth of coverage as compared to the genome. So it looks like so far we can actually use depth of coverage to actually identify hypoaneuploid within these lines. And similarly, it's all red because it's homozygous isogenic, which means that all of these SNPs came from parent 1. So if the SNPs were bad, you would see multiple colors. You'd see blue and green, indicative of either bad calls or heterozygosity. In this case, we don't see those colors, which is what we want. So this is where things get more interesting. This is an F1 hirsutum bibarbidensi intraspecific cross, hypoaneuploid for chromosome 11. So chromosome 11, as you can see, is about half of the depth of coverage as compared to the rest of the genome. That's what we want. But where things get really interesting is in the following slide. So this is a heterozygous line. So what we would expect is all green, which is indicative of heterozygosity. Now it's missing hirsutum chromosome 11. So where we would see chromosome 11, we should see only a barbidensi chromosome, and that's exactly what we see. In this case, blue is indicative of parent 2, which is barbidensi in this case. So the reason why this is a good result is because this validates the fact that these SNPs are one. They're actually true SNPs, because if they weren't true SNPs, you would have random colors. And where you have the loss of heterozygosity into homozygosity in chromosome 11, you see what we're supposed to see, or what we expect to see, which is a barbidensi allele set, not a hirsutum allele set. If the SNPs were bad, we would see a mix of like red, blues, and greens. In this case, we just see blue. So similarly, for chromosome 17, similar format. As you can see, there's half the depth of coverage, which is indicative of it missing that pair of chromosome. And when you look at the allele distribution by parent, you can see that it's heterozygous across the entire genome. And then once you get to chromosome 17, you can see that you have that loss of heterozygosity into homozygosity. So that blue indicates barbidensi. The green represents the heterozygosity between hirsutum and barbidensi. So good so far. So this is where it gets a little bit more complicated. So this is the radiation hybrids, for some of you that may not be familiar. What we did is that we irradiated TM1 pollen with a sublethal dose of radiation. We don't want to kill the pollen, we just want it to fragment the chromosomes. Then you go ahead and pollinate. The key here is that we don't know where these fragmentations are occurring, they're random. And this is a similar format. You can see that there's loss of depth of coverage across the genome. Now in this case, we have segmental loss, not just whole chromosomal loss, so this graph isn't that informative because you really can't. You only have resolution up to a chromosome, not up to a segment of a chromosome, but it still gives you an indication of where you have that loss. For example, chromosome 3, 7, 20, and somewhat of 22. Where it gets interesting is where you look at the distribution of allele by parent. Now, I don't have a zoomed-in version of this, but once you zoom into the chromosomes, you can actually see the specific losses of heterozygosity into homozygosity within the chromosomes. So at the end of, or at the beginning of chromosome 2, there's a loss of heterozygosity at the very beginning of chromosome 2. Then you have the regular chromosome, then towards the end of chromosome 2, you have more loss of heterozygosity. So you can actually map out the loss of heterozygosity into homozygosity using this approach, using these SNPs, using the methodologies that we used. And similarly, this is a second radiation hybrid. Second line, you also have loss of depth of coverage across the genome. And when you look at the alleles by parent, you can see where you have that loss of heterozygosity into homozygosity. So chromosome, pretty much all of chromosome 2 lost heterozygosity, so that's just a barbidensi segment, as well as chromosome 4, all of chromosome 8 as well, and then there's some deletion events at the end of chromosome 15. So in conclusion, the combined SNPs were identified in the 27 common cultivars, and only 3% of the SNPs were found to be heterozygous. Now, when you're looking at inbred lines, you don't want to find heterozygous SNPs, so the fact that we had such low heterozygosity is indicative of these SNPs being accurate. For the copy number variants, as I mentioned, the F1s and the isogenic homozygous lines all displayed respective depth of coverage were expected, as well as loss of heterozygosity were expected. This goes to show that capture-based genotyping by sequencing does have a potential for SNP mining and marker selection within cotton. And our future work includes redoing this analysis, which we already did. We have the data back, it's just sitting in our computer right now, in order to achieve that 60x depth of coverage sequencing target. So these are my acknowledgments. I'd like to thank my chairs, Dr. David Stelly and Dr. Claire Gale, Dr. Amanda Holz for her guidance, as well as Amid for the SNPs, Dr. Resende and Neves from Rapid Genomics for their collaboration, as well as Kathy Sainsky for helping me out with a lot of the bioinformatics stuff. And that's everything.
Any questions for Louis?
It was based on Amanda's work. She designed a backend based off of a TM1 sequence, right? And so we used the probes based on her backend reference sequence, right?
Where do you see the next step?
It would be to, for me, it would be to bring the resolution down for the copy number variance. Because right now we're just looking at major copy number variance for whole chromosomes. But if you can bring that down to a locus level, that would be pretty amazing if you can identify genes using this type of methodology.
Any other questions?